This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It is the 26th day of August, 2011, and today I'm talking once again to our regular guest, Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster at intforecaster.com. Bob Chapman, always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here again in these, what I would call, raucous times. There's plenty to talk about.
There certainly is. I mean, raucous times hardly begins to describe some of the amazing things that are happening around the world right now. But I know you've been covering, obviously, a lot of the debt downgrade and things that have happened while we've been on our little hiatus here. So there's a lot to go over. Where do you want to start?
Well, we'll quickly go into the debt hiatus, the extension of the debt of the U.S. government, called the Budget Control Act of 2011. And that could have been settled in 15 minutes. What it was all about was two basic things. And number one, it was dragged out deliberately so that they could implement what is called the Joint Select Committee on Deficit Reduction, also known as a Super Congress. And if you go back to the 13th century, you'll find a thing called Star Chamber Proceedings. And they were finally eliminated during the 1200s with the Magna Carta, upon which most freedom in the history since has been based upon, our way of life, the British common law, etc. Secondly, if you look back at the Soviet Union and at Politburo, you will see it was very similar to that. But the thing that comes closest to it is the 1933 Enabling Act passed by the National Socialist Party and Adolf Hitler. And so I've called this act as a term, the Budget Control Act of 2011. The Obama Enabling Act. And what it does is it allows the committee to make up the laws, hand them to Congress, which cannot debate, amend, filibuster, or anything else. It's an up and down vote. And the people on this committee, including the president, which is number 13, are all working for the people behind the scenes who pay them off. So what you have is a modern version of an Enabling Act, a Star Chamber proceeding, Politburo, and it will lead to a dictatorial government in the United States. Congress may as well go home, because all they were going to do is vote on what these other people have to say. The second important thing about this political charade that we witnessed from May the 16th until August the 2nd was that while it was going on, Standard & Poor's, but not Moody's and Fitch, stepped in and they said that the cuts that were being made or contemplated by the Congress and now this Special Super Congress Committee were not enough. So they lowered the rating of the United States government, and they said, if by November you haven't cut the more, we're going to lower it again. Now, the reason for the cuts is to destroy Medicare and Social Security. It's extremely important. And that's what they're after here. This whole plan was promulgated by the Council on Foreign Relations and its former chairman, Peter Peterson, in the Peterson Foundation. They want to destroy it them completely. And then, of course, the Obama health care will come in 2014, and then they'll have their death panels, and the people who are very ill, who are going to cost government a lot of money, will be allowed to die. And that will get rid of a lot of, quote, pensioners. And that'll help towards bringing the cost down. So that's what that was all about. And most people don't know that. unless they read the international forecast, because nobody else that I know covered it in that way. Just recently, we have seen in Europe great indecision. There was a proposal to Greece, which they passed illegally, and the proposal was to get more money. And finally, the Germans have come out and said, look, our constituents don't want to do this anymore. And they saw that in Hamburg and Rhine-Westphalia in March, when the CDU and Mrs. Merkel's coven, you want to call it, in Hamburg, were soundly defeated for that reason. They won out. And so government is saying, look, we're not going to ask for collateralization, but we're not going to finance anymore. And the ECB, the European Central Banks, and the bankers saying, you have to. And they're saying, we don't have to. In fact, it violates our constitution. So Europe takes off for a month like nothing was going on. One of the worst financial events in 100 years, and they're on the Côte d'Azur, sitting on the beach. Most of you don't know what the Côte d'Azur is because you don't speak French. It's a Riviera, as you know it. And so nothing has been accomplished. There was a little song and dance by then my Mrs. Merkel and Mr. Sarkozy that got absolutely nowhere. It was sort of window dressing. And so we come into September shortly, and they got to face the hard facts. They don't have a deal. And Finland is saying, hey, we want collateral. And I think the whole thing's going to come unglued before the end of the year. I think Greece will drop out, and then the other five will drop out behind them. It'll take probably a year or two, but that's what's going to happen. Major European banks are broke. Even the solvent countries are on the edge. Yesterday I saw that there's big shortfalls in revenue coming in to the German government, and they're the strongest. And France and Holland and Austria are close to the edge. And so Europe hasn't been solved one bit. It's worse now than it was before. Then we have the regrading in the United States, which caused the regrading of all of the, not all, but a lot of municipals. And that's going to hurt because their prices fell, the yields went up, and if they want to raise more money, they're going to have to pay more money. And they don't have any money. They're laying off people, which make up 70% of their costs, as fast as they can. And this is going to continue because the revenue is out there. The states cannot go bankrupt. Municipalities can. There's probably 30 states that are on the edge of bankruptcy. There's probably five or six of them which are already bankrupt. And the only way they can improve on that is to charge more taxes to the people. And I don't think under the circumstances it's a very good idea. But that's what the situation they're in. We're seeing in your face massive manipulation of the stock market, the bond market, the commodity market, and the gold and silver market. Let's talk about the gold and silver market first. I've been doing this for 53 years, very shortly. And I'm probably one of the five leading experts in the world in gold and silver shares. And so my whole adult life has been spent in this venue. And we saw in May what the United States government and the people who control them, which is banking and Wall Street, the major banks in particular, and hedge funds, and other central banks attacked silver. Well, they were successful. They knocked it down from $50 to $32.50 an ounce. Raised, and they were responsible for it, believe me, raised market margin requirements from $4,500 to $21,600. And they were helped along by the major firms that doubled that. Well, that doubling is gone now. I'm going to move over to gold now, and the reason is a reason for it. We just saw 3 days of the same kind of attack, taking gold from about $1,900 to $1,700 an ounce. They did the same thing, but they used two margin requirement changes. The markets in silver and gold are very different. In silver, it's very thin, and there's a massive negative short position by J.P. Morgan Chase, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation, Goldman Sachs, and Citigroup. And that is being overlooked, and this is a cornering of the market, by the CFTC, a government agency, the Commodity Futures Trading Corporation. They just don't deal with it. They just let it continue. Now, the thing that these people as professionals are missing is when you take down markets quickly like they did, number one, you get it over with very quickly. And that's not good for them, and it's good for us. Usually something like you've seen in each instance takes 3, 4, 5 months to accomplish. They couldn't wait for that. They had to prove that they could do it and that they are all powerful. But what they forgot was when you clean out all the small and intermediate investors, you don't have any resistance on the upside. And that's why silver went from $32.50 back up to $44 in a relatively short period of time. Now, they're not going to leave the market. They're going to continue to do what they're doing illegally, cornering the markets. They tried to do the same thing with gold, a very vast market where far more people take delivery. And raising margin requirements, even from where they're at, I think they're $8,500, $9,500, even if they took them to $21,600, where the silver market is, they're not going to accomplish anything. Because people who are buying gold can pay cash, and they don't mind doing so. So it's not going to have the same effect. So the day before yesterday, I did 8 programs, and I told everybody who was listening, you go in tomorrow, which was yesterday, and when gold hits 17 to 1725, and silver is down 39 to 40, you buy with both hands, because they can't keep it there. The amount of money needed in the derivative option and futures market would be staggering. And they're going to have to let the market turn and bottom. And I was right. And today, which is Friday, gold is trading up between $20 and $30 an ounce, and silver is up about 30 to 50 cents an ounce. And so all they've done is create an interlude. In the next 3 weeks, gold and silver go right back where they were. And they will break out. And gold will probably go to 2,000, 2,200. Silver will attack 50, may or may not break it at this time, but probably. And by the end of February, I'm looking for $3,000 to $3,200 an ounce on gold and probably $100 an ounce or something like that on silver. They can't stop this thing. It's out of control. Just to give you an example, the day before yesterday, the Rothschilds, with their own wealth, had to step in to save the giant government bank in France, Société Générale. That's just the beginning. All the banks in Europe are broke. All the big banks in the United States are broke. And so that's an overview, and you saw what they did in the U.S. stock market. It started to go down. They turned around, come in, bought SPUs, and drove it right back up again. Well, they can't do that forever. The public's watching. They're realizing that the whole game is rigged. And so more and more people, I think, are going to be leaving the stock and bond markets and gravitating into commodities, but particularly gold and silver, shares, coins, bullion. It's the only place that they're safe. And so that's what's happened in general since we last talked.
Well, that's quite the overview. And what I take out of that is that there's a lot of very, very worrying news. And I guess the only upside is that people who are watching the gold and silver markets and know what's going on there can find a way to maintain, I guess, their value in terms of their savings while the currency is devalued. But that's still, I think, little solace overall when we look at the way the economy's continuing to be gutted out. And it just seems to be heading for worse and worse. I guess more choppy waters as we head into September. And I'm certainly no financial expert like yourself, but if there's anything that I know, it's that September and October tend to be particularly brutal months as you say, Europe comes back from their vacation and starts to realize that nothing has been taken care of in the meantime, and their economic collapse continues apace. I see some very, very troubling times in the next month or two, and the potential, of course, as always, for its starting of new wars and false flag events and all of that, those kind of goodies that tend to crop up in the fall. What do you think about that assessment?
Well, the Federal Reserve knows that they can't solve the problem. They have instructions to carry this thing out as far as they can, or until the powers behind government decide to pull the plug, so to speak. In June, I said the QE3 had begun, and what the Fed did was use the $300 billion in short-term paper that was maturing through the summer to augment the purchase of new treasury notes, bonds, in bills, as well as agency securities, and maybe even some of that toxic waste, which they own $1.3 trillion worth of. And they never told us what they paid for it or what it's worth. And so I said probably around the middle of August that they would start to talk about the possibilities of QE3. They started a week before that, so it was close. I project the first 2 weeks of September, QE3 or something like it will be reality. And one of the things you have to notice here, and this is pure psychological warfare, and if you're not trained in it, you don't know what these people are up to. I was trained in it. And whenever you see an attack on silver and then gold the way it was, you know that there's going to be some dreadful things coming up. Those were two vicious, in-your-face attacks that a high school student could have identified as manipulation. And so I said that because it won't bear out what you're talking about. September and October are going to be dreadful, and that's true. It is going to be, they are going to be dreadful. And that's the way I stacked it up. And of course, if there's no QE3 equivalent, the whole thing's going down the chute. And I believe that at this time they don't want it to, by their actions. And gold and silver are going to go right back where they were and go higher. It presents a tremendous opportunity for buyers in that venue, and there'll be tremendous pressure in the stock market. They'll try to hold it up, but it's going to go down. How deeply is hard to say, but somewhere on the Dow between 85 and 110,500. I think they'll try to defend it someplace in that area. They almost made 10,500 here just recently, so you can middle the thing and say 9,500. And the bond market is being held up by swap agreements, and I won't get into them because they're too technical, but the ringleader in that is Morgan Stanley, and they're playing a three-card Monte game, and the other player with them is the Fed of New York, and they're the ones who are driving bonds higher and yields lower, so that banks can borrow cheaper and so they can do something with the housing market, which by the looks of it is not going to bottom out in June of 12, which I predicted in 05. It will probably take another 5 years. And so if you're thinking about buying anything, don't, because the pressure will be to the downside on prices. The inventory is going to be somewhere. Now hold on to your seat. Somewhere around 8 million homes. The inventory now is about 3.5 million. That's where we're headed on that, and that's why they need those rates down, and that's how they're doing it.
Well, again, that's staggering. You mentioned QE3. I'm a bit out of the loop, but I've certainly heard that the consensus is that QE3 is pretty much a foregone conclusion. What's the latest on the official word on that?
There is none. And they won't come today at 9 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time because they will hold it off to the first 2 weeks in September because they never make policy at Woods Jackson Hole. And it'll be subtle today. Bernanke will say, well, everything's not so hot. We may have to do something we don't know. And that'll be about it. And then, like thunder and lightning, in the first 2 weeks of September, they'll say, gee, we got to do something, whether we like it or not. And the same extortionist approach that the government and the Federal Reserve have used since this credit crisis began just 3 years ago. And there's going to be all sorts of patchwork. The big one is going to be gold and silver. And the people who are in the stock market, with the exception of the gold and silver shares, which incidentally are turning the corner, and they're about to start really booming again. So you can keep that in mind. But people are in the market and in bonds, I'd hightail it out of there. I don't know where you're going to put your money besides going into gold and silver related assets, but get out, because it's going to get nasty.
All right. Well, turning to geopolitics, which of course is just an extension of the economic calamities that we see all around us. And of course, you mentioned dictator Obama and the Super Congress and the destruction of the Constitution. Well, of course, we've seen unthinkable destruction of constitutional principles earlier this year with the undeclared unconstitutional war in Libya. And of course, the culmination of that with the special forces leading the siege of Tripoli. What do you see coming out of these events, and how do you see things developing from here, as a lot of people are speculating that Syria might be next?
Well, Libya was geopolitical. They wanted to have a gold dinar. They didn't want AFRICOM, which was a creature created by the New American Century, which is the neocon group that put the Bushes in the White House. And it's been continued on. Obama is a neocon, no matter what party he's in. He does what he's told, just like that other goofball they had in there. And there's an aside here. I just wrote this morning. It'll be in today's issue, tomorrow's issue, of the International Forecaster. Rick Perry is in the race for one reason. And as you know, and if you didn't know, you know now, he was a visitor twice at the Bilderberger meetings, and that is a trial ground for picking people who will be president of the United States. And there's plenty of evidence to that effect. And he's being financed by these oligarchs, if you want to call them that. And he was involved in the Trans-Texas Corridor, turning the roads into toll roads so foreign companies could come in and own the toll roads. And the North American Agreement with Canada, the United States, and Mexico banding together economically, same currency called the Amero, pushed by the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission. And he was instrumental in trying to get that to happen, and he was unsuccessful. He also mandated shots for little girls, and the shots were to, I forget what they were for. I had to do this with something of sexuality.
Right, it was Gardasil, which was for HPV.
That's right. Right. Thank you. I can't remember everything. and he was responsible for the death of a number of young ladies, young girls. And but I think the most damning thing, and if you look at my appearance last Friday, I'm on with Alex Jones every Friday, there was a debate or a coming out of information from people who are in a position to know that, number one, Rick Perry is in the race to neutralize and destroy Ron Paul. Second of all, for those of you who did not know it, he's a philanderer and leads a second life, supposedly being one of these purest of Christians. And he not only associates with prostitutes, but they're both male and female prostitutes. And so I don't think we want somebody like this creature in the White House. And that's his background, and that's for sure. And so as we evolve through that campaign, which has over a year to go yet, we're going to find out lots more about Mr. Perry. And I thought I would bring that to light because a lot of people who are listening don't subscribe to the International Forecaster or watch Alex Jones. And incidentally, I have a tape on that program in tomorrow's issue, which is a link to Alex's InfoWars. It's very important. Alex did not want to cover it because he was afraid for his life. These people murder people, and he knows that. And but he had to because it was being carried to some extent by the media in Texas and a little bit in throughout the world, you might say, but no major coverage. Well, I want to give it major coverage. I want people to know what kind of person Mr. Perry really is.
Indeed, and I think you started that by saying that he was in the race for one reason, but I'm not sure you explicitly finished that.
The main reason was to derail Ron Paul. That's what it's all about. And whether he becomes president, Mr. Perry, is irrelevant. They'll have something else for him. He'll probably get paid $5, $10 billion for what he's doing, and he'll be happy with that, and he'll just go out and get more prostitutes. And incidentally, he always pays him cash, which makes me think that perhaps maybe he's got some other lines of business going.
Indeed. Well, it obviously doesn't surprise me at this point, any of the shenanigans that these paid political creatures get up to. So of course, you bring up Ron Paul, and the only candidate who's in the running at this point who's really talking about any of the real issues. So, of course, the establishment is freaking out about him, as always. So tell us about the latest about the Paul campaign and how things are going for him.
Well, in Iowa, the voters were bought off, and he lost by a very slight margin. And that's something he's going to have to continue to put up with. But if he doesn't win the polls, he comes very close. And that will continue. And his strength will gain as the year goes on, the year between now and then, the election. And I think he's going to do extraordinarily well. I'm concerned for his safety. And so isn't he, because he's discussed it with other people. They had a meeting in Orlando last week, and one of the people who was going asked me if I wanted to ask him a question. I said no, but I do want him, and this question was given to him, to go after the president's working group in financial markets, which is rigging all of the markets. And it's got to be stopped, because there's no chance that 95% of the people who are in the market can make any money. 70% of the trades, approximately, are done by computers and algorithms, which is front-running. They call it flash trading or other euphemisms. And you can't have government and people behind government rigging every market, because what's happening is people are going away from those markets, as I described earlier, and that will continue. And the lifeblood of the American economy is raising capital, and you're not going to be able to raise capital in an environment where people know that the show was being run by a group of criminals and being aided and abetted by the Securities Exchange Commission and the CFTC, Commodity Futures Trading Corporation. And so it's number one in my hit parade besides getting rid of the Fed. And if we could stop that, we'd have a free market again, a real market. And so that was the only message. And when it was given to him, he said, "Thank you very much. I know who Mr. Chapman is." And I'm sure he gets my publication, although he's not a subscriber. And so I think he's going to do very well. He just raised $1 million. Of course, that's not a lot of money in the scheme of things today. It was his birthday, number 76, and mine will be in another month and a half. I'll be 76. So
you're just a young whippersnapper.
Yeah. Well, we're both in excellent health, and that's good. And we're going to raise heck with them for a long time to come, that they don't liquidate us, and that's one of the reasons I don't live in the United States. And so I am fearful for him, and he knows that. He knows the chance that he's taking, but he thinks the same way I do. I live my life. I've done the best I can, and this is going to be my swan song, and we're going to get him. And he knows that, and he's sacrificing his life for the people of the United States and probably the world, and most people don't get it, including the financial writers, who seem to be wandering around in a maze someplace.
Well, on the contrary, I think a lot of the financial writers do get it. I think they're just attempting to run cover for the establishment as always and trying to cover up. But I think Ron Paul is absolutely exploding all over the place, and I think that's quite evident from the way that he's really in every poll in the top two or three candidates on the Republican ticket, and despite the complete media blackout that's been being waged against him, and they just can't continue with it anymore because even the suppression of the information is now becoming a story, and people are starting to say, well, I'll have to look at Ron Paul because they don't want me to look at it. So I think they're really shooting themselves in the foot, but they don't have many options.
No, I think you're right. They don't have many options, but they're going to do anything they can, whether it works or not, and it's going to injure them. And like you just said, they're shooting themselves in the foot, and they just don't know what to do. They're running around in circles. Look at Brzezinski's speeches for the last 2-3 years. He's told people in the CFR and the Trilats and the Bilderbergers, look, these people are catching up. They're going to pass you. We got talk radio, which goes all over the world now, and we got the Internet, and they're taking you people apart. Now, I don't know what you're going to do to stop it. I got my own ideas, but that's the way it is. And the longer it takes, the less chance they have of being successful. That's not going to mean that we're not going to see terrible financial and economic times throughout the world. We are. Different nations will suffer differently. Europe, England, the United States will suffer the worst. Maybe Canada and Australia and Mexico will suffer half as much. No one's going to get out of this without great pain. So get ready for it. No matter whether Ron Paul is elected or not. And even if he's elected, it's going to be an uphill fight because these people are still going to be in a position to fight us. So there's a long road ahead. And we're really just starting to make that first step if we can get him elected. If we can, it's game over. It's revolution. And that's what you're left with. And if you don't like that, that's too bad. That's just the way it dopes out.
Well, that's unfortunately quite true. I think if the last few decades has shown us anything, it's that the president is nothing more than a figurehead in this day and age, and the real power lies well behind the throne. So getting Ron Paul elected would be a step in the right direction, but by no means the silver bullet. But just speaking, I guess, from my own perspective here in Japan, I'm wondering where you see the Japanese economy heading in the next few months to few years.
Well, I think, first of all, they're going to have to continue to raise funds internally. They have been selling U.S. treasuries. How much, I don't know, because it's a big secret. And those funds are being used in congruity with raising money locally, which they've always done, which is, was a good thing. But the economy's never really recovered from 1990. It's been in kind of a limbo, a semi-depression. And but they've done well under the circumstances with the hand they've been dealt. And then, of course, we have this earthquake that comes along and the nuclear problems, and that certainly hurt them. And it's going to be a real struggle for them. The export markets throughout the world are starting to dry up. It's not only for them, but if you look at the German figures and the Chinese figures, they're starting to head south. And Japan is going to be no exception. So it's going to be a real struggle. They're going to have to work very hard to do the things that they want to do and to keep everything together. It's a very structured society. The people are very strongly nationalistic, and I think that's very good. And I think in the end, it'll pull them through, not without the pain that everybody else is going to go through. So things are going to get worse in Japan, just like they are every place else, and maybe a little bit more than they should because of the earthquake and its fallout, we'll call it. And but under the circumstances, they're doing okay considering what they've been through.
Well, that's true. It certainly could be a lot worse. And there was an interesting headline that grabbed my eye the other day. Japan unveils $100 billion effort to cope with yen. And it's basically talking about the finance minister here, Yoshihiko Noda, making an announcement that there'd be a release of foreign exchange reserves to the Japan Bank for International Cooperation for funding to aid exporters and spur purchases overseas. So Japan definitely hammering its sail to the mast of the U.S. and going down with that sinking ship all the way to the end. Is there some point where you could imagine Japan decoupling from the U.S. and trying to forge a different type of economy based on Asian trading?
No, because they made a deal at the end of the Second World War. We'll control the politics in your country and give you the stability that you need. We're only going to hang one guy. And you guys got to split the loot that you took out of Asia for the past 20 years. And that's, you know, this was the Yamashita gold and all of the things that went along with it. And that's the deal that the Japanese made at the end of the war. And a lot of people were in on it. And the gold's all gone, but the deal is still there. And so I don't see them separating from the United States as a... you might call it a colony, but they will expand business in Asia as much as they can, and I think that's good and it's healthy, and throughout the world. I mean, they're building plants everywhere. The Japanese worker is having the same problem that American and European workers are having because production is going to China, Indonesia, Mexico. Mazda's building a brand new plant in central Mexico. $500 million, 4,000 jobs. They can't do it in Japan or South Korea or whatever because the wages are too high. And until free trade ends, the third world's going to profit and the established nations are not, because in between those two groups, they're transnational corporations, and they're making all the money. And in the American case, the money is made and kept offshore tax-free, $2.2 trillion right now. I don't know what the deal is in Japan, whether they have something like that. But that's going to continue as long as there's not world tariffs. And the world needs tariffs on goods and services, because all the nations of the world have been degrading their currencies to stay competitive versus the United States and Europe, and there's no level playing field. And until that stopped, you're going to continue to see what you see, and all of a sudden nations are going to start going bankrupt, including the U.S. and Europe and everybody else. And it's the only fair way to do it, to offset the lower costs that are now prevalent in places like China. And it's not just China, but places like China. And unless we do that collectively, internationally, the whole thing's going to collapse.
Unfortunately so. Well, you raise the specter of Yamashita's gold, and if people out there haven't studied into that or read about that, that's a fascinating little bit of history that I think it would be interesting for people to read more about. But just moving on, finally tonight I wanted to touch a little bit on oil. I haven't been following the price of oil at all lately, but I assume that the disruption in Libya has had an upward effect on oil prices. But maybe you can tell us about how oil is faring these days.
Well, it's been trading in the low 80s, somewhere in the vicinity of $85 a barrel. And Libya really didn't affect anything. The exploration came to a halt, and most of that was being done by the Chinese. They had 32,000 people in there. They pulled them all up, out except 1,000 or 2,000 to maintain their interests. And I don't think Libya had hardly any effect whatsoever on the price of oil. And Libya is going to be run by the United States and Britain, and NATO will be there. And it's a travesty. It was a looting operation. And they're just stealing everything in sight. You know, 143.8 tons of gold, $100 billion in their sovereign fund, four aquifers that's got enough water to probably supply plenty of nations in northern Africa, the best oil in the world, second largest reserves in the Middle East, and they wanted it. And they just went in and took it. And the people who were fighting the rebels, they were all Taliban, Al-Qaeda. They were all run by the CIA, U.S. Special Forces, Navy SEALs, SAS. They were all involved. It was a U.S.-British operation. It's disgusting. And anybody thinks that there was a justification for what went on is sadly mistaken. And so oil will probably drift back up again, but I don't think it's going to run anywhere unless there's another incident in the Middle East, like Iran or Yemen or Saudi Arabia, those sorts of things. It'll probably hang between $70 and $100 a barrel, and it could get as high as $120. But if the economies of the Western, of the whole world, are slowing down, I would think demand would either stay static or fall. So if that's the case, it's hard to make a case for higher oil prices without some sort of a military event in the Middle East or worldwide. And so it's probably going to hang around in that area.
Well, I suppose that's good news of a sort, but of course the specter of war is ever present, and who knows where the next military action for the NATO interests will come. So I think we'll leave it there for now. We've certainly covered a lot of ground today, so let's leave it there, but perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about the International Forecaster newsletter and how people can get a copy of it.
Well, the Forecaster is about business, finance, economic, social, and political issues all over the world. We publish by email on Wednesdays and Saturdays, runs around 40 pages each time. We have a hard copy that goes out twice a month, and that's for those who are not on the Internet. Everything that you need to know each week is in that publication. You can get a free introductory copy by going to theinternationalforecaster.com, theinternationalforecaster.com, or you can go to www.intforecaster.com, intforecaster.com. For those of you who would like to ask a question, we answer everyone, or get a copy of either, or get a copy of our recent releases of gold and silver share recommendations, email us at Bob, B-O-B, at intforecaster.com, Bob at intforecaster.com. And for those of you who'd like to call toll-free, that number is 877-479-4900. 877-479-8178. 877-479-8178. You can get a copy of either there. And for those of you who want to become subscribers, you can get a free subscription by going to that number. The deal that they're offering is really terrific, so take advantage of it.
Excellent. Well, thank you, as always, for the updates. It's always exciting and interesting to hear your take on things, as I know you are constantly scanning the news and staying up to date with the latest, so it's great to hear your perspective. And did you say you have a birthday coming up in 1.5 months?
October the 16th, 1935 is when I was born.
I will mark it
and
on
I
my
will
calendar.
I will be 76 years old, and I never thought I'd make it beyond 30. And I'm very happy to be the age that I am, accomplishing more today than I've ever accomplished before, and I'm healthy, and I hope it stays that way.
I'm sure you'll put us all in the grave. Bob Chapman, it's great to talk with you, and I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you all for listening.